Hey guys, welcome to episode 146 of the JV Club with my marvelous guest, Aaron Fitzgerald. Once again, guys, same old song. You know how this works. I've been wanting to podcast her for years, so I'm so glad it finally worked out. I think you guys are really going to enjoy this episode, particularly those of you who, like sort of getting your inspiration from the podcast and from the podcast guests. I can't think of a more inspiring guest than Aaron in the conversation that we had. So I hope you enjoyed it. I welcome you in. I want to get some shout outs out there. I want to thank Haley for her email. I want to thank Jenny and Jennifer A for your emails. I want to thank Jennifer A for your young adult book suggestion. I got to check it out. Karina, I want to give you a big, huge shout out all the way so that I can reach you in Brazil. I want to say a very long reaching shout out. Hello to George in Wellington, New Zealand. I hope we get a chance to say hi in person, George, when I'm there with the Thrilling Adventure Hour in May. Jalen, I want to thank you for your email and let you know that I am thinking about you, and I hope everything works out okay with the family. And then the last thing I wanted to tell you guys too is that the shirt that Nico and I designed for, I should say she really did the bulk of the work, guys. It would be dishonest of me. You guys know I'm not an illustrator. The shirt that we created for headline shirts for the SF Sketchfest contest for charity. This is going to be going towards the Art of Elysium, which is an astonishingly fantastic arts organization that works a lot with kids and I guess also adults in hospital, etc. I do some volunteer work for them in person, and it just brings me an amazing, immense amount of joy. I'm so appreciative of that organization. So again, that's the Art of Elysium. So proceeds are going to go to the Art of Elysium. The shirt is on the Headline Shirts website. That's headlineshirts.net. It is extremely limited. They've taken it to $20. It was $28, and I was like, you know what? We should do 20 to make it easier for you guys, because I also wanted to volunteer that if you buy one and you want me to sign it, you can just send it to me, and as long as you cover the shipping both ways, I'm happy to autograph it for you. It's so worth it for this money to go to the Art Elysium. So that offer stands as well. There's shipping information and stuff on my website, janetvarney.com. So without further ado, that was a lot of information, but hopefully you'll find it worthwhile, and I'm sure it would make a great gift for someone too if you want. That's it. Enjoy the episode, and I will talk to you soon.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
I feel like I have played it in the last 5 years.
Interesting and fun.
Yeah.
I love hearing that.
Yeah. I'm always surprised
when people don't know what it is, because to me it was such a huge part of being a kid.
I felt like it was, you create your own fortune.
Totally.
You're setting your intention for your life. And I wonder, when I really think about it, because I'm from Canada, how many times I must have written Los Angeles on my match.
Really?
Just because it's one of the, Los Angeles, Paris.
Yeah.
And I wonder how many times I got it. Like, I don't remember what I ended up landing on, but I wonder if it ended up – I wonder.
I know.
Now I want to go back, and I wish I had kept every single one of them.
Right?
So I could see.
I do too. God, I was thinking about that the other day. I was like, oh, if only – because I do keep a lot of stuff. I have still a lot of stuff. I throw away a ton of, and I'm not very sentimental about certain things, but like, I guess having journals and things like that feels like it's covering that, but there's no MASH in my journals. So.
Right.
Oh man.
Wow.
Were you into stuff like sort of tarot cards, and like, did you have a curiosity for sort of fortune telling stuff when you were a kid and like a teenager and stuff?
I don't know if it was as a child. Like, I was much more into native spirituality as a child. In grade four, I lived in Toronto for that year. And I remember we were doing Inuit studies because it's Canada.
guys say grade four instead of fourth grade, everybody.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Adjust to that. I know it's probably a tough difference.
It, you're going to take really a while to catch up. You guys
she does
wrong.
Mean fourth grade.
Yeah, yeah. And we did. That was an amazing year. Actually, the grade four and five I like the way you guys say it. Yeah, grade 4 and 5.
It's better.
I got really heavy into native spirituality, legends, tales of fables, parables, as well as Greek. And so I remember really being intrigued with that. So I guess I've been studying all sorts of different philosophies and spiritualities since I was a kid, definitely. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say I was ever into tarot specifically. I did get into runes.
Oh, see, I've never.
Yeah, runes were so much more fun for me. The way they broke down and the way that they, it seemed a little bit less fortune-telling and a lot more kind of, for me, checking in with myself, higher self. And then it got to a place where
on board for that.
I remember I would. At the same time that I had learned the mantra Hue, mm-hmm. and started using the Hue, I was 24 when I discovered the Hue. I started singing the Hue every day, and that was taking me some wild places inwardly. I would travel inner worlds and have amazing dream experiences and experience love just walking around in a new way. And it was at the same time I had been doing runes for the longest time, and it was such an amazing experience. I remember the day where I picked up the rune bag. You know, I posed my question, and before I put my hand in, I knew what rune I would pull.
Wow.
And I kept doing it over and over again, and I thought, that's what the Hue was doing for me, was that I didn't need the runes anymore to tell me, because I was getting that information, like that Hue was connecting me directly to source. So mm-hmm. I didn't need to go through anything. I could get everything directly.
Well, we got to get, I mean, I can't, many, many people who are listening to this do not know what the Hue is, right, as I did not when I first met you a couple years ago.
Right.
So if you don't mind, I would love for you to,
because
everyone's probably like, what is she talking about?
So
right
the
now?
Hue is an ancient, I'm going to say name for God. It's found in almost every religion. The Egyptians used to sing to, I don't remember if it was the Sphinx, but one of the major icons out there, that it used to be called the Hue, and they would go and sing Hue, just Hue, from midnight to 6 a.m. because they felt that it sparked their creativity. Hallelujah used to be just Allah Hue, they would sing, and it turned in time into Hallelujah.
Oh, wow.
And so it's found everywhere. Like, if you read any of Rumi's poetry, Jalaluddin Rumi, uh-huh. he writes about the Hue all in his poetry way back when. So for me, it's the guy there was this guy I was working with, and I know I told you this story a couple of years ago, but he was just always in a good mood. He was always happy and had a great sense of humor about him. And it wasn't one of those things where, you know, he's really, really perky at work and then just a dark person at home. Uh-huh. He was like that all the time. And I was working with him doing, you know, I was assistant stage managing, so backstage at a theater company. And you know how stressful things are pre-show and it's a professional theater, they get really, really like it's life and death. He never took anything too seriously. And
that's so powerful.
I know.
Personality is so powerful to all of us.
And I worked with him for 2 years before I finally asked him. I'm like, dude. And I thought I was like, he was First Nations, which in Canada is Native or Indian here, mm-hmm. But we call that First Nations in Canada. He was First Nations, so I went about right back to the First Nation spirituality that I connected with when I was 8. That wasn't doing it for me, although it gave me a lot of love, but I wasn't how he was, and I'm like, I want to be like him. And so I was doing everything that I could see that he was doing. I was mimicking his behavior, but I still didn't have that lightness that I knew was in me. It was somewhere within me that I could be that light all the time, but I just didn't know how to access it. I had so much ego and mind stuff in the way. So I finally, after 2 years, turned to him and said, Tim, how do I be more like you? And he said, have you heard of the Hue? I'm like, no, I've never heard of the Hue. What is the Hue?
Whatever you're about to tell me sounds too simple for whatever it is I think is your secret.
Right, exactly. So he made me close my eyes, and he said, we're going to sing Hue 3 times. And then he gave me kind of like my first spiritual exercise. While I was singing Hue, he said, just focus on me, who I was, not the body, but who I was with my eyes closed. And he made me imagine myself be as large as the universe is, and then imagine myself being smaller than a speck of sand. And that was my real self, that my real self had no limitations and can do anything. He said, go and sing Hugh for 2 weeks. If you like it, come back and I'll give you more. Which was so Mr. Miyagi, right? Yeah. Wax on, wax off. And I did. I went and I sang Hugh for 2 weeks. And it was mind-blowing, because what happened when I started singing Hugh, and I would sing it for 20 minutes every day, eyes closed, no wrong way to sing it. I could sing it to my favorite song. I could sing it. You know, I could spell it. I could do it in my mind without saying it out loud. I could sing it out loud to the top of my lungs. And I played with all of it. And I found for those two, and I'm never going to, I mean, I've been singing it now for 20 years, and I still haven't forgotten those first 2 weeks mm-hmm. where coincidences started happening at a rate that shocked me. So I would have a coincidence, and not even a minute later, a coincidence related to that coincidence, and my whole day would end up just being this amazing synchronicity of coincidences that by the end of the first day, I no longer believed in coincidences. I realized that, okay, whatever this word is ridiculously powerful, and it seems to be aligning my universe. Mm. Then I remember, because I was always carrying a lot of anger. I don't know where it came from. I don't know if I brought it into this life or not, but I was always carrying anger. And I remember walking down the street, and for the first time, and I don't even remember how long, I could feel, this is going to sound so crazy, I could feel the love off the trees, off the plants coming at me that I had never paid attention to before. And the more important factor was, all of a sudden I had a love flowing out of me going to that consciousness, and that's what I wanted. I wanted to be able to give more love in my universe, and I wasn't giving. I was so locked up with anger and other mental things, and this hue just seemed to be like a golden key that unlocked my heart, and all of a sudden love, even if it was just a little bit, it was still flowing out. And then I read, there's this book called The Seeker by a man named Phil Muromitsu. And in this book, he ended up at some temple in the Tibetan Himalayan mountains, and a spiritual master named Phoebe Quantz was there. And he was describing the hue to him. And he was describing it, you know, in Tibet, they had all the gompas, and the monks would do mantras, and they'd repeat it over and over. And he was saying, when you say I love you to the person you love, you wouldn't just do it in a monotone, repetitive manner, because that doesn't express your love. When you sing Hugh, you can't do it in a repetitive manner. It is a love song to the creator of love. That nailed it for me right there. It's a love song to the creator of love, whatever that means to you. There's no wrong way, but it needs to be sung with love. So when I sing it, I try to focus on something that evokes some love. And every day it's different, because some days I'm really closed off. Mm. It can be as simple as like a really good croissant. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like, oh my God, that croissant. Thank you to whoever made that croissant.
Yeah.
Or my puppy, my man, you know, having a clean house. Generally, it's something really simple for me. If a butterfly flies by the window, that can unlock me mm-hmm. from that grip of my mind running through all the things I need to do. And so that hue every day for 20 years has been probably the only reason I'm still here, and haven't done anything horrific, and I'm not in jail for murdering someone.
I mean, we're thankful for the hue.
You know what I mean? Yeah. But I think it's really, it's been amazing. It's been an amazing journey. So that's what I love most in the universe.
What, first of all, I'm not in any way dismissing or moving past that, because something tells me it will be a very present part of the rest of what we talk about anyway. Okay. I wanted to say one other thing, which popped into my head when you were talking about this idea of not being monotone and not sort of being a zombie about your connection with something. Mm-hmm. And all I could think was, when you were saying like it's always different, is it's alive.
Yeah.
It's alive.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's really what I thought. Was it's alive.
Alive.
And I think that's one of those things where, you know, even if you don't walk away singing the Hue.
Which you don't have to.
Which it depends on sort of, I guess, where you are in your life. And maybe you have a Hue of your own for whatever that means.
It could be the word love. It could be anything that works for
but
you.
But I think what I love about so much of what you just said and what we talked about when we hung out, we were lucky enough to hang out a couple of years ago out of town, is that idea of making that choice. And I think I also really appreciate you saying, you know, it's not like now you're that guy who's just forever in the best mood ever. That it's a tool.
I'm still not quite Tim.
Yeah,
my goal in this lifetime is to become Tim.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And so like to think, you know, to hear all of that. And I think maybe for someone, especially if someone younger is, you know, sort of struggling through stuff and thinking like, oh, well, then she just unlocked it. And like now she's just like the Buddha all the time. It's like, no, this is still a tool and still something that you choose to use to.
Yeah. And it's been one
to deal with the stuff that comes in.
Exactly. And everybody uses tools all the time. It just so happens for me, this tool, I've never hit a plateau with it. I've never gotten bored with it. It is never not taken me to a new place, whereas other tools that I have played around with, I get tired of and then I let go completely. This one, it seems to be, I seem, you know, 18 years, I've been singing it for 18 years, but I feel like I'm just getting started with it.
That's
I feel like it, all of those years were just to get
and
used to it.
And who doesn't want something like that? Who doesn't want to feel like they're just getting started, to feel that passion about something and to feel that that sense of like it's turning over and over.
It's amazing.
Itself,
it's really good for healing too. I need to put that out there for people who are healing, whether it's from an emotional or mental wound or a physical wound. Singing Hue, you don't direct it. So you don't tell the Hue or direct the Hue on what to do because you don't actually know. The Hue itself is like its own consciousness and it understands what's going on with you better than you do. So you sing it with an open heart and let it, giving it permission to heal what needs to be healed.
Oh, yeah. That's so powerful.
Yeah.
So this is what I was going to say before I launched right back into the Hue again, which is that if you don't mind, because of the age that you were when that was the something that you discovered was pre-adolescent or was not, you know, was post-adolescent.
I was definitely practically a teenager. definitely.
I would love to hear. So I know you lived in Toronto for a year when you were grades 4 or 5, but what about before and after that? Where were you in high school, for example?
Okay, so high school, my most formative years, I lived in Ottawa.
Okay.
Ottawa, Ontario. I went to Confederation High School, which is no longer a high school in Barrhaven. And
Ottawa's kind of a neat town.
I love
to talk about it for a second.
Yeah,
it's been said by someone close to me that it is a good starter city. That it's like enough of a city that you sort of get a sense of a city. You're not living in a tiny town.
Yes.
And then you go to a bigger city and you're like, okay. Like
it
Toronto.
Is a very government city. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's where the head of the government, it's like D.C. in Canada is Ottawa. So my dad was a Canadian naval commander. So he was doing, you know, Navy work at the, you know, the source for a number of years there. So yeah, I really loved it there.
You're just right across the river from Quebec too, which I think
is
kind of cool.
Yes, I am. C'est pourquoi je parle français. Mon accent, c'est québécois. Yeah, we would, oh my God. Okay. So I think I was 14 when I had told my parents I was staying over at a girlfriend's house, you know, and we were all taking a trip to Hull, which is in Quebec, where the drinking age is way different in Quebec than it was where we were. And we had heard that in Hull, they didn't card. So they wouldn't even ask. So I was 14 and I'm like, we're going to do this. I was very, very adventurous. And I don't even remember who I went with now. Like, that's the crazy thing.
Did someone drive or did you guys take a train?
No, we would have bused it.
Okay.
Because we had bus passes because of school.
Yeah.
Because they gave us a bus pass. Hilarious. So I know it took like 3 hours to get there. I don't remember who I was with. If you remember, that would be great. Message me on Facebook because I don't recall. I just remember being super nervous and afraid of getting busted and going. And I don't remember what time of day it was. I don't remember what day of the week it was, but it was dead. Like nobody was in the clubs except for, you know, the hardcore people. So I remember getting into this club and being severely disappointed. And I thought, I'm going to go dancing, because right. I was a big dancer in my teens, a huge dancer. We used to have non-alcoholic dances for teens every weekend. There was one guy who named Party Arnie who would do non-alcoholic dances. Perfect. For teens. Now, all of my friends would drink before they showed up.
Sure.
I didn't like to drink, so I would be sober and I would just dance my ass off for the whole night. And then there was another Astrolite. That was what it's called. I went downtown Ottawa. You could go to the teen bar called Astrolite, and that was amazing. So this was breaking free of both Astrolite and Party Arnie. I was like, I'm going to go to hell. And I remember sitting in this bar, this seedy bar. It was so seedy. It was just like you would see in a movie, like as seedy could be. Right. And this dude, and I swear to God, this was a real thing that happened to me, and this man actually existed. He was, you know, skinny with a mustache, Quebecois. Uh-huh. He had the, you know, like beige button up shirt with like button down, so his chest hair and chains, God. For real, amazing. The chains hanging down. And I remember him coming over and asking to buy me a drink, or he was hitting on me, whatever. And I'm like, this dude knows that I mean, when I was 14, I looked 14.
Right.
There was no, I did not look like the way a 14-year-old looks now.
Right.
Like, I mean, the 14-year-olds I know now look like they're 27. Yeah. I'm like, no, I looked like a dork.
Yeah.
And I remember going, wow, this is not for me. I don't think.
No.
Hey, do you want me to buy you a drink? Huh?
Oh.
You want something? Pina colada?
Oh, no.
And I'm like, I'm good.
Do you want a little
so good,
girl
drink? Yeah, it was so stupid. Oh, but God. It was so much fun, and I did it. I never went back. Like, not until I was older.
Yeah.
And when I was...
But you guys didn't get in trouble?
No. Yeah. Nobody ever knew. I don't even think my... Well, I've learned all the things that I didn't think my mother knew, she did know.
Mm-hmm.
Now I know she knew. Mm-hmm. She just never told me that she knew. Mm. She figured if she let on that she knew, then I would stop, you know, like I would go under, I'd go really stealth,
right.
So she wouldn't know.
Right.
I thought I was getting away with a ton of stuff. My mom always, when I said I was staying overnight at a girl, my mom knew I wasn't staying overnight at a girl.
So interesting.
But
that
I was
sort of good
at
that
kid.
Quiet dance that parents, some parents
yes.
and children do where there's so much that's going unsaid.
So much.
It's so interesting.
And I really hated drinking. I hated drinking. I was not a fan of being drunk. I always felt like I was trapped in my body. My body would be so drunk that I couldn't do anything. And my mind would be crystal clear inside of me going, what are you doing? You look like an ass. You're behaving like an ass. Oh. And I hated that feeling. So my dad hooked me up and was like, just tell them you're allergic to alcohol. Like, that's
in a way you
genius.
Were
genius.
In a way,
but
you were.
I had to go through this horrible experience first.
Yeah.
I remember, I think it was 15. It was in Ottawa. My girlfriend, she was one of those girls. Like, I didn't care in high school who I hung out with. I would go from like the drama kids to the nerdy kids to there was like a group of smoker kid dance kids that would go dancing on the weekend. So those were the kids I liked because I would go dancing. There were friends that I knew from a little bit before. There were, it was just, you know, cheerleader. I could just go back and forth from group to group to group. And I did because I really liked learning about different personalities. Like, that's the actress part, right?
Sure,
like
sure.
Really getting to know different types of people. And anyway, one of my friends, and she wasn't a close friend. She was more of a friend of one of my friends. And she got invited to a party by all the football players, all the senior football players. Now, I was in grade 10. So
guys, that's 10th grade.
And yeah. And senior in Ottawa is grade 13 because
okay.
They have one extra grade after grade 12 so that it's like the year of preparation for university. So if you take grade 13 courses, it helps you when you go to university to somehow. I don't know. I never
yeah.
finished grade 13 because I moved to the West Coast where they ended at grade 12. Mm. So these grade 13 dudes, so they're grown men as
sure,
far as
sure.
I'm concerned,
yeah.
are doing this drinking party and my girlfriend's invited and she's got a crush on one of them who literally was named Dick.
Perfect.
And that's what he was.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, really? And
so
I was concerned
everybody.
For
yeah.
her. So I'm like, all right, I'll go with you more than anything to just keep an eye on her. Well, having not very much experience with alcohol because I didn't really like it, they were giving me, what the, It was peach schnapps. Mm. So that was my first experience with the flavored liqueur that tastes like candy.
Yeah.
So these older guys are feeding me peach schnapps. And I'm drinking it because I like candy. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this is delicious. And I was swear?
Absolutely.
I was totally shit-faced, like beyond shit-faced. He was being a dick to her. She decides we're going to leave and go someplace. This chick, teenager, she had been not texting because we didn't have cell phones, but she had been calling. She connected with some other guys, college guys. Mm-mm. And at this point, I'm three sheets to the wind. She's like, we're going to go meet these guys in a parking lot and go to their house. And I'm like, yeah, we are. And if I had been sober, there is no way in hell I would have gone with her. Like, that is the dumb, like, this is why they say teenagers shouldn't drink. You make stupid choices. Here's my stupid choice. And I remember walking down this really, really long hill and having to pee really badly. And I'm like, I am be right back. And I go over to the tree and I pull down my pants. I lean against the tree and I waz. And then I put the pants back up. I'm like, I'm good to go. Then we go down to this freaking parking lot. It's fancy race car, college dudes, two college dudes. I get into these two strangers' vehicle, like the stupidest thing you could possibly do. Went to their house. She's like, she just must have been so desperate for that attention or something. I did not care. And this is how the universe takes care of me. As soon as I got there, I start puking my guts out. So I'm literally locked in the bathroom puking for hours. It went on for hours. I have no idea what happened for her. I'm sure not much because I was loud in the bathroom. And you can't quite make out with a dude knowing your girlfriend is
retching.
So at some point, they finally realize it's not going to get better. So they put me in the car, and he was such a dick too. He was like, don't puke in my car, man. Don't puke in my car. So I remember hanging out the window, and I think I was puking out the window down the side, and then I'm dropped off at home. Now this is where the story gets good.
No.
So I walk into the house. I don't think I walked. I think I crawled into the house. I got in, and I'm thinking, I got away with everything. And my mother is standing right at the front door. And she's like, Erin. Oh, wait. No. I walk in the house and there's a bathroom to the left immediately. So I go in there to puke. And as I come out, I'm coming out. And of course, my pants are off. I'm wearing my underwear. Perfect. That drunken.
Perfect.
Your legs.
Yeah.
I can't want these clothes.
Why do we wear
clothes? Yeah. I come up and my mom's standing there and she's like, did you have a good time tonight, Erin?
Oh yeah,
I'm not
and you
drunk.
You know you.
I'm not
of
drunk.
Puke and schnapps.
And I'm not. I'm good. Yeah, we had a very good time, Mom. It was okay. I'm really tired. I think I'm gonna go to bed.
Oh God.
My mom just steps back. Okay. And then I can't walk up the stairs. I'm fours, crawling up
so
the stairs. You know, thinking my mom hasn't caught on. She's too. I really thought my mom was too stupid to catch on that I was shit faced.
Amazing.
And as I'm crawling up the stairs, she says, "Erin, what happened to your ass?" I'm like, "What? What? You have a scratch on your ass?" And I said, "Oh, Mom, it's just a little itchy."
Oh God. Oh no.
Just a little itchy.
Oh, no.
I go to bed. My father the next morning at 6 o'clock in the morning comes in with a plate of greasy food and starts yelling, "Hey, get up! It's breakfast time! I think you're..." Because I never drank that much ever in my life. I had never experienced a hangover. I didn't know what I was in for. My dad got the most out of the experience.
Oh, he certainly
screaming
did.
At me very, very. And all of this happened the night before.
Your naval commander dad.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they were leaving town for the weekend. Like, this was going to be the first weekend they leave me at home with my sister. All happened the night before.
Perfect
they were
timing.
Leaving me at home with the most responsibility ever. So my dad yells, he does the food, and I'm like, no. And I go and I run and I throw up. And I'm like, okay. You guys are on to me. Yeah.
You finally got around me.
Okay, you guys, okay, I'm busted. And I look at my ass in the mirror, and from when I took a waz on the tree, I had scraped off half of my ass cheek.
Oh, but I didn't
feel it because I was so drunk.
Of course.
And it was like a huge scab over half of my ass cheek.
Oh, no.
It was the funniest thing that had ever happened. And of course, the wheel, what I loved about my parents, they didn't punish me. They should have, but they didn't punish me because they thought that the hangover and everything that I, they could see that I had, I wasn't that type of kid anyway.
Well, that's what I was going to say is, you know, it's kind, it's, I think it's great of you. It's big of you to say they should have punished you, but like, it's clear.
Yeah. I got,
you know
I
what
got
I'm saying? That you, you know, and that you were, they, and that they did know who you were and they knew that. And like, if they knew you to be a different person, you would have been punished differently. I'm guessing.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah. It was, that was really cool because they did have to go away and I did stay with my sister, but I was so, oh my God, I felt so bad. I was like, we're not doing anything, Kara. We're just staying here for the whole weekend. Yeah. And I, and that's when my dad gave me the line. If you don't want to drink, just tell them you're allergic to alcohol. I'm like, well, how do they know? Just tell them you puke blood. Wow. They don't know.
Yeah.
That line saved me for the rest of my teens.
Interesting.
I would tell people when they, all that peer pressure and everyone, and they, it was peer pressure. People were serious about if you don't drink, then you can't hang with me. Mm. But because I had said I was allergic and I would throw up blood, people would just back off and not give me alcohol. Then the next time I went on an alcohol binge, as it were, where I gave in to the peer pressure. It was a good 5 years later, and I was 19 living in Victoria, British Columbia. And a guy there, he really wanted to get with me really bad. So, you know, I had something – and I hated beer. I freaking hated beer, like really hated it. But I had something in my glass, and he kept refilling it, so I didn't notice how much I had. One of those classic mm-hmm. teenage moves.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, he didn't know that I didn't drink, even though I said I don't drink. I will puke blood. I don't drink. I'm allergic to alcohol. And but here I was drinking anyway. Well, it didn't take long before I started throwing up because my body wasn't used to it.
Sure,
my body was like hell no. Reject, so his whole night was. I'm like, yeah, there you go, buddy. There you go. So yeah, me and alcohol never really got along, which I think is a real blessing.
Absolutely.
Because I mean, I had friends who it really got along well with.
Right.
And you know. Pregnancy as teenagers, all that stuff would happen because you're not making good decisions when you're liquored up. You're just not.
I didn't. I don't know that if I can. Anyone can say that. They can say what they want about booze, but I'm not sure anyone's like I do my best thinking when I'm drunk.
I want to meet that
person. I want to meet that person. How much younger is your sister?
She's 5 years younger than me.
Okay.
Yeah, and one of my favorite experiences when she was a teenager, she was 14. Mom and dad had been gone for the weekend, and I got home from university, and I swear to God, this is really, it's, I can see all, now that we're having this conversation, I see these beautiful cycles of life happening. So I open the door, and she's doing the crawl up the stairs on all fours. My sister drunk is the funniest thing on the planet. There is nobody funnier drunk than my sister.
Possibly you, but you just don't know.
No, my sister is so funny because her one-liner, like she just has... Hi, Aaron. I'm not drunk. Oh, by the way, a police brought me home. You're going to have to call the cops me. What is turtle wax? Do you wax turtles with it? And then she crawled over to the sink, opened it, got the bottle of turtle wax and waxed poetic about the turtle
wax
while I called the police officer. And I trying not to laugh. I was like, okay, officer, thank you so much for bringing her home. She will be punished. I totally did the fake. You know, and but I got off the phone, and then she was the most entertaining she had ever been in my life up to that point because it was that teenage angst of not wanting my little sister around. But oh my God, when she was drunk, she made me laugh.
I mean, you really ended up
so much
serious
fun.
Bonding.
Yeah, that,
so that
was a good
the
moment.
Gift of her being shit faced, ass drunk.
It totally was.
Oh my God, what you mentioned boys? So I kind of want to go there because obviously
boys.
I think many of us have been male and female, gay, straight, have been easily influenced, you know, in those ways, or like that's the person, somebody that you have a huge crush on or you're interested in, is the person who sort of gets you to cross certain lines. And
yes.
It could be drinking, or it could be booze, or it could be drugs, or it could be sex,
be
or it be nothing.
Yeah.
Could just be not respecting yourself. Could be
yes.
And also, people can bring out the best in you. You know, you can want to be a better person for the
true.
Right person too. But what was your experience in high school like with the opposite sex?
It was awful.
It was awful.
Awful. Yeah. I did not do well with boys. Not that I didn't have boy. My first boyfriend, I think he only, it lasted a week. And I think he only went with me because I liked him and he hadn't had that experience before.
Did you say how old you were?
15. I
had to be 15. Sorry, I'm clearing my throat so much,
guys. I really didn't have boyfriends at all before. I had crushes, like, to die, like, my heart. Death. Oh, I was, I know, so wanted, right? A boyfriend so badly. All I wanted in life was a boyfriend, and I couldn't get. And then this guy, and he was black, and I was white. And I learned at the end of the week that he was very racist towards white people. That wasn't. It was really taught to him by his parents, but I was like, I can't be with you because you hate me.
At least you have the presence of mind to.
But that was the best thing that ever happened to me, because one of his best friends became that year my best friend and is still my best friend to this day, and is like the person that I go. He still lives in Ottawa. He's married with kids, but he has been my best friend since that relationship.
Isn't that something
amazing? Like, it was the best thing that ever happened. The other relationships were awful. Like, I date a boy and they dump me because I wouldn't put out. I was not okay. My mother is a nurse, so at the age of 3 or 4, she had given me that Where Babies Come From book. So I knew full well if the penis goes in the vagina, a baby comes out. Mm-hmm. And in the book, it said two people who love each other very much. So all these boys coming at me, I'm like, I know you don't love me very much. And if you put that in here, it's going to equal baby. And I am not going to be connected to you for the rest of my life because you want to put that in me.
Listen to that maturity. You know, the maturity of not liking the way you felt when you were drunk, which is has so much to do with wanting to feel sort of that, it like the permission to be out of control, right? To not have that inclination, to not feel like you need to sort of, I mean, a part of doing drinking and doing drugs, like, it doesn't, being a teenager isn't any, I don't know that it's any easier or harder than being adult. It's just different.
Yeah,
but,
it is different.
But for sure.
It's more intense.
It's very intense.
So intense.
It's intense in an immediate way, in an immediate emotional way. And so hormonal. Big surprise, like someone hypersensitive like me was leaning on drugs and alcohol because I think couldn't handle
to dull
being,
it out.
Yeah, I couldn't. Yeah. And I didn't see that at the time. I think I thought I was expanding those feelings.
Right.
But now I look back and I'm like, well, I think I was self-medicating because I was a wreck, you know. Well, to need that, you know, for you to want to be connected to who you were and not feel out of control or not feel numb.
Right. I think that came with the fact that because my dad was in the Navy, I moved every 2 years of my life. That was the saving grace. Yeah. Every time I would, those behaviors like smoking or something would come up and I'd start doing it, my dad would get a posting. And it would be during that transition that I got, and I really would consciously think that I get to be whoever I want going to the new city.
Right.
Nobody knows who I am.
Right.
I can be whoever I want to be. I can be the best me possible. If I want to change my fashion, no one's going to talk about it. If I want to become more of this type of a person, no one's going to notice. I think because of that freedom of getting to completely shed a previous identity and claim a new identity, part of the actress training as well. But I think that's what kept me away from drugs, alcohol, and smoking for my teen years. Because I had that
yanked
freedom.
Right out of,
I had that freedom. I didn't have to dull it. I got to reinvent it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
That's
so,
a blessing.
So we're for, but, and did you spend, I know you left before grade 13, but did you spend 9, 10, 11, 12 in one place?
I did 8, 9, 10.
8, 9, 10.
And then grade, Where did I do grade 11? I think I did 11 and 12 in Victoria.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so you moved to Victoria again, as you said before.
Yeah, and I didn't connect. The people I would have gotten in trouble with were in Ottawa. That dark alley that I was kind of heading towards, because I was making bad decisions because boys were asking me to do things, and I was.
But it's still so interesting that you put the brakes on. Well,
I wouldn't take my pants off for anybody, because I'm like, look, if you ejaculate and it gets close to it, how do I know that the sperm isn't going to find its way to where it needs to? Like, I didn't know for sure, and I wasn't going to take any risks. But I was frisky. I wanted to make out.
And I feel it's not used enough. Loving frisky right now.
So frisky. I was out of control with that. Yeah. I mean, I definitely wasn't frigid. Uh-huh. You know, I wanted to explore. I wanted to try things, but I I didn't trust the teenage boy as far as I could throw them. They were all full of baloney. They were all just trying, and you could feel it. They were all just lying so they could get a little action. And there was some times where I was like, okay, I want a little action too. So I'm going to use you because I know you don't really like me. And the proof would be, you know, 2 months into it, they dumped me so they could go sleep with someone else. Right. No, they were already sleeping with someone else. And then they dumped me during that process. And then I'd love to play the victim, but I don't get to. There, right when I was going to move when I was 16 to Victoria, I knew I was getting posted, and I had gotten my first acting job as an extra for a TV series called Denim Blues in Ottawa. And guess who was starring in the series? Who's a big star now? Sandra Oh.
Oh, wow. She was an actress.
I was an extra, so I didn't get to talk to her, really. But I was like one of those daily extras that came all the time. Mm-hmm. So I knew the director and the crew and everybody like that. And one of the actors took a liking to me. And I can't remember his name now. And he was a musical theater guy, but he was flirting with me hard. And I was in a relationship. I've been in a relationship for 3 months. And for me, that was like 4 years.
Right.
It was like, this guy hadn't cheated on me. This guy,
and how
really
old were
loved
you?
Me.
Like
16. So I knew I was moving. I knew I was going to have to break up with the guy anyway. And I wanted to go on a date with this TV dude. Why? Because I had stars in my eyes and I was catching the vapors. And I just wanted to have the experience. It really came down to, I just want to see what this experience is like.
Sure.
But I didn't want to do it the wrong way. So I did break up with the current boyfriend, knowing we're going to move anyway. And I did go out on a date with the TV guy who... oh, shock, surprise, wanted the exact same thing as everybody else. And I'm like, really? I'm a little disappointed that you're really going for the gold on the first date with a teen girl. Not cool.
How old was he?
He was 20s? A couple years older than me, so I think he was 19. He had to be 19. He was a TV dude. So I remember being super disappointed and being like, I dumped my boyfriend for
oh, no.
You're an idiot. Oh. And then the TV guy... was chasing me after that because I really wasn't interested after he tried to go for the gold. I was like, you just didn't have any patience and all respect for you is lost.
Yeah.
And I remember, oh, this was one of those worst teenage moments. I was going to my girlfriend who was also an actress, her birthday party. She was having a big birthday party. She knew TV dude. She invited TV dude and my ex-boyfriend.
Oh no. Oh no.
So.
Oh no.
I'm at this party. And all my friends are there, you know. And at that time, your friends are everything. Like, they were everything. It was such a small world. And I did not have the reputation of one of those girls. Like, I was not the girl that broke people's heart. I was the girl that got cheated on all the time.
Right.
I was that girl.
Right.
And here I was at this party. And TV dude is trying to, you know, like, hey, baby, let's go out. And I'm like, oh, no. And ex-boyfriend is like... did you dump me for this asshole? And I'm like, we're not together. We're not together. No. I'm totally not even with him.
Yeah.
But dude, TV dude just wouldn't, like, he just, the smarm just kept pouring from him. And I'm like, oh my God. I remember getting on the bus with my bus pass, getting on the bus, sitting, and my ex-boyfriend and my other ex-boyfriend who did cheat on me with my ex-boyfriend, like, they're both standing there like, you bitch. And I'm like, For real, I'm that girl now?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
But I got the experience, and I wanted the experience.
Yeah.
I wanted to be on the other side for a change.
Yeah.
I wanted to be the girl in control and decide this is what I get to do next. The boys got to do it all the time.
Right.
So I got to have that experience. And then after that, I was really particular. I went back to being really particular. I just wouldn't date anybody. And after that, I kind of became a long-term relationship kind of girl.
Yeah.
Not to say that I don't, you know, between long-term relations, I wouldn't have flings.
Right.
I have.
Well, you're frisky.
Exactly. I get frisky. So, and that was fun and everything, but I knew what they were. I knew what a fling felt like energetically, and I made those boundaries, and I was always very honest, straight up with flings. And long-term relationships, one of the first things I learned in my early 20s was to set the tone with, look, you're going to see whoever you want to see. I'm going to see whoever I want to see. If we're going to do this as a relationship, you need to afford me the respect. If there is somebody else you want to get with, you tell me and be honest. So I have the choice to either stay with you while you have that experience or move on and have my own experience.
Right.
And I will afford you the same respect that, because you can't control when somebody else has feelings for, right. for some, you, that chemistry thing is a weird thing.
Yeah.
And you just don't know when that's going to happen. So instead of pretending like it might never happen, why not have a conversation of, well, if this ever comes up, what do we do about it?
Right.
And I remember one dude I dated swore to me, absolutely, absolutely. And he was heading back to Australia where I knew a bunch of his ex-girlfriends were. And I'm like, look, I'm letting you off the hook before you even go because I know there's no way you're not going to be sleeping with people while you're there. There's just no way. It's impossible. Right. And he swore to me up and down, no, 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 no. And then he came back and he lied to my face and said he hadn't. And I'm like, this right here is why I'm going to break up with you right now, because I don't care if you did or not. I knew you were going to. It's the fact that you can't be honest about it.
Right.
Because it's that honesty. If you can't be honest with the person you're with, then that's not the person to be with.
Right.
You can't be dishonest with each other. That's no basis for any relationship. Even friendships. Like if I'm lying to a friend, then I need to check.
Right.
What am I doing in this relationship? And why do I feel the need that I have to pretend to hide something from them? That's not cool. Maybe I need to back off from this person for mm-hmm. a while and reassess myself, because mm-hmm. I shouldn't be lying to them. And if I don't feel comfortable being honest with them, maybe they're not healthy for me.
Right.
You know, it's right. hard.
Yeah.
Those are things that are so hard to do as a teenager, because I was lucky because I got to change my social setting every couple of years. For the people that are stuck in the same place with the same people for long periods of time, that right. just breaks my heart. Of like, because once you get trapped into something, it is so hard to get out of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because even your perspective on feeling lucky or saying that you're lucky, you know what I'm saying? Mm. It's like there are people who feel very unlucky to have had to move every couple of years.
I don't know that feeling.
Do you know what I mean? Because like I've had people on the podcast who were army kids or, you know.
Right.
And I think everyone that I've talked to, I mean, I don't know that I'm drawn to depressed people being on the podcast. That's not really what I'm about. But so no one ever says like, you know, I wish that wouldn't have been the case.
Right.
But I think that whereas you expressed it just now as more of an opportunity,
yeah,
other people were like, this is a huge hurdle I had to overcome.
Wow.
Was this experience of totally. Saying goodbye and saying goodbye and saying goodbye and saying goodbye. So it is like part of it, I think, too, is your wow. your experience of it and your perspective on it. And the other thing I was going to ask you is like, how early in your life were you drawing? I mean, was it pre-Hugh too? Because I know for me, guys, for those of you who listen for the comedy, I apologize for the cheesiness of this, but also I don't apologize at all. And you know that. I don't apologize for the sincerity of it. These sort of rolling waves of like spiritual connectedness or like sort of awakenings that are sort of mild. Some of them feel big. Some of them feel small.
Those kinds of things. Yeah.
And obviously Hugh being like the biggest for you, but you've yeah. talked about, you know, some connections that you had. And I'm not just talking about like a specific way of thinking or somebody else's invention of that.
I came in with it. I think a lot of people do. And when I came in, I mean, I was born in with the curiosity.
Like a seeker.
Yeah. Yeah. That is the best
word.
Wait,
is that the name of the book that you told me?
It is, actually. Okay.
But that's probably where I got it.
But that's exactly what it is. Yeah. It's a seeker. Because yeah. I remember I was born in Victoria, British Columbia, up island. So in this very, very, I remember we had a house, and next to our house was a huge mansion and a huge property. At the front of that property was a little trailer where their mother lived. She was in her 90s, Mrs. Proudfoot. On the other side of that mansion was a huge cemetery. Huge. And I remember at the age of 3 and 4 I could wander anywhere I wanted without my parents. And I remember wandering into the forest, and I used to have conversations with the trees and the bugs and the birds, and I used to eat all the berries and stuff. And I remember having a connection, and I don't know if I called it God. I don't know what I called it. I just knew that I felt loved, and I didn't have to have other people around to feel loved. I knew that I was incredibly creative, and it was wild. I remember on one of my adventures at that really young age. But for me now, when I have the memory, I don't remember the 4-year-old body. I remember it just as me.
I understand.
And I remember discovering this tiny little chapel and thinking, oh my gosh, I found a little house. And I opened the door and there was stained glass coming in. Nobody was in it. And it's like six pews or whatever. And I remember walking in and going, I found a secret place.
Sure.
I found a secret place.
Is there anything more exciting than that?
Oh my God. Yeah. I didn't know. Yeah. So, and I asked, my parents didn't have any religion and didn't practice anything. So the people across the street were Christians. And I used to ask if I could go to Sunday school with them. And my mom was like, yeah, sure, you could go. And I remember asking my dad, why don't we go to church or synagogue or temple or anything? And he said, I don't believe anyone should tell you what to believe in, which was kind of the basis of my own belief system. Like, I loved that my father gave me that freedom to figure it out for myself. Sure. So all the time growing up, if I found a friend whose family belonged to a particular religion, I would go to their church or synagogue or temple. I wanted to know. I was like, how do you worship God? And I never resonated with the word God growing up. I wasn't good with that word because it seemed to be abused a lot. Mm-hmm. But I'm okay with it now. But at that time, I remember there were things I would connect with every single religion and that I loved. And I was like, you guys are all saying the same thing. And I knew that at like an early age. I knew at 8 years old that all religions were saying the same thing and that it was us making the separations.
Right.
That it wasn't necessarily a bunch of different gods. It was the same God to me in my imagination. And as we misinterpreted each other and what we decided we liked or disliked, we would make these ridiculous separations when it all boiled down to love. And almost all of them would say, God is love. And I'm like, so that means love is God. So maybe God isn't a him and a her.
God, people
maybe,
really don't ever flip it like that. Right? Though. It seems like the simplest thing in the world.
Love is God. Like what if love is God? What if? Just wonder about that. What if love is God? And what if God is a consciousness, state of consciousness? What if it's a being or whatever? What if it's, I love the poetic terms for it, the ocean of love and mercy. Mm. What if love is an ocean of love and mercy, and from that ocean of love and mercy, all life is created? What if? I don't know. I'm never going to know. I'm not going to be an expert on any of this at any time soon, but I love wondering about it. And I was wondering about it then. And I love listening to people wonder about it. And I love listening to people's spiritual experiences, because a lot of them are the types of experiences where they don't share with other people because they don't want to get made fun of. I'm the person you talk to because I am not going to make fun of you, because I love hearing other people's out-of-body experiences, experiences with lights and inner sounds, experiences with seeing ghosts or wayward spirits, experiences with energy, experiences with coincidences, prophetic dreams, any sort of dream experience, flying in dreams. I love all of that stuff. And there are, in LA, there's a lot of these free places where you can go and just talk about your spiritual experiences. On Facebook, there's a page called Spiritual Experience Gatherings that just lists events around Los Angeles and Southern California that you can attend for free, just so that you can share these experiences. And I'm getting that kind of stuff out there as much as possible, because I seem to be attracting people who are having these experiences. And the sentence I hear the most is, I've never shared this with anyone.
Mm.
And their life, like that moment where your whole universe is I keep hitting the mic, sorry.
I'm a mic expert. I'm really good at the mic. Let me smack it some more.
That I'm using my hands when I talk. Oh, I'm very messy.
I'm the king of that. So
it's been really, I'm really enjoying. I love, and I think my story is not unique. I think a lot of people from their childhood on, whether they were born into a particular religion or not, I think a lot of people were seekers as children, and somewhere along the line, it made someone else uncomfortable, and maybe they got, you know, told to put it in a box, put it in a closet, squish that little part down. But I've never met a kid that I couldn't have a spiritual discussion with. A deep spiritual discussion where I leave going, holy smokes.
Oh, wow.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Because they are close to it. They are like, they remember that source, that whatever that is, you know, that kind of stuff.
My God. For those of you who listen to the podcast on a regular basis, you know I am rarely speechless. But boy, you're driving this train, and I knew you would. And I've been I've wanted you on since we met, and we're in the same place at the same time. But I really, I just hardly have anything to add because I'm so in love with everything that you're saying. I just can't be more on board for it. And you don't know this podcast.
No.
But it is.
I know
But there are, this stuff comes off a lot. And in a way.
That doesn't surprise me knowing you.
Yeah. And in a way, I am a seeker. But in a way, this almost is like, I don't even know how to express this. It feels like your episode could be sort of an epicenter, and from that, these little tendrils stretch out of these other episodes that I've had with people where we sort of talk around it or talk about it or talk about starting with one religion and sort of ending with none or starting with none and ending with something. And so I'm very interested
in the way you said that, just that freedom, the freedom that we have in America to search freely. You know, other countries don't get to do that search. You have to pick one of the top three, otherwise you'll be in a sticky situation. But here you have the freedom to explore as much as you want.
I love that. And I clutched my chest when you said that you felt that perhaps, you know, people who are seekers feel the discomfort of someone else. And I think that the grand version of that is this sort of, and I've talked about this on the podcast before, but the sort of, smarter you are, a lot of people, the smarter you are, the less okay it is for you to be any kind of spiritual. And I'm talking science spiritual.
Oh, yeah.
I'm talking Sagan spiritual.
Yeah, yeah. Quantum physics.
The sort of apex of people who believe that the apex of our human evolution is to understand that there is no God, there's no meaning to anything, and life is a cold, hard place, and you live it and then you die.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel that way. And I don't want to rip on the comedy community because I don't think that's even true anymore. And maybe it was never true, but I felt like it was inappropriate to be a seeker in a comedy community because it's all about taking the piss. It's all about let's get through our pain by joking, or let's not feel any pain because everything's silly and fun, and where is the place for that seeking? And now I feel like, and I think the podcast had a huge effect on me in my feeling about this, is that I'm surrounded by funny, intelligent, great, silly women who are in the comedy community who are also, you know, very spiritual. So that has, my defensiveness about it has changed and evolved so much over the last few years. But also feeling like, God, what did I want to say? So sort of the idea of feeling like you're being tamped down by even a group of people that you respect and feeling like you can't do that. And then, you know what, there was one other thing that maybe will come back to me, but I love the idea of that openness. And the fact that it can spill over into anything. It doesn't have to be a Bible. Yeah. It doesn't have to be anything other than this idea of feeling like you're a part of something bigger. And that's, you are.
That.
Like, get used to it.
Yeah.
You are a part of something bigger. You are not an island. Like, sorry.
Surprise.
Sorry, you're breathing in other people's air. Your atoms belong to something else once. We're stardust. Like, all of that kind of stuff is...
What you do today can affect someone else's life for the rest of their life. Like, even if you boil it down to that simplicity, you don't even have to believe in God. You don't have to believe that we're connected. You don't have to have any of these beliefs. Of course you don't. That's the beauty of the freedom. You don't have to do anything that isn't right for you. But no... That beautiful, simple law of cause and effect is real. You smiling at someone when you're walking down the street and you don't know that they're about to commit suicide and that you smiling did something, opened something within them that maybe that day they chose not to, you don't know how deeply you affect the lives of others. None of us do. I think we would love ourselves more if we were aware of how our tiny actions can transform someone's life. We never get to find that out, at least not in while we're here.
Right.
But I love that the simplicity of that. There's this parable. I love this parable. It's called The Giant Utensils of Heaven and Hell. And because I was not brought up Christian, I never really had, heaven and hell really didn't have a particular meaning to me because I always thought, well, it could be heaven here or hell here where I am. But I love this parable, so I'm going to tell it because I think this is, you don't have to be, believe in God or anything to understand this story. So this guy, all right, he's at the end of his life. He croaks. He goes up. He goes to see this huge judge. And this judge is the dude that every time somebody dies, you got to go in front of the judge. The judge looks at all the good things you did, all the crap things you did, and tries to balance your ledger, finds out whether you got to go directly to heaven or if you're going to go spend some time in hell. So he's going over the ledger. He's like, you did a lot of really good stuff in your life. Well done. Oh, you know what? There's this big nugget right here. You never really paid for it. So you're going to have to do a little bit of time in hell. So we're going to send you to hell now. And dude is like, oh, man. Okay. All right. So dude ends up in hell. Now, hell looks exactly like here. So he was really surprised because, you know, the fire, brimstone, everything. He was like, I thought it was supposed to be. Where's the horn guy in the red? But it was just, you know, just like kind of like earth, except everybody he saw was emaciated, skinny, dark circles under the eyes, and horrific impression on their face. Just completely miserable. And everyone walked around like miserable zombies, just moaning and miserable. And he was like, oh, man, okay. This is definitely not a place I want to stay. But I wonder why everybody is so miserable. Well, it's 6 o'clock every night. There would be this huge banquet call for dinner for all of hell. And it was this huge banquet table that would go from one end all the way to the other, and everybody would have their seat. On the banquet table was every kind of food imaginable. Everything you would ever dream of, from pizza, salads, sushi. Like, my imagination goes to all sorts of foods, like, and foods that I could eat and never get fat. I'd be like, yay!
For you to everything. Not have ever listened to my podcast, because that is the number one MASH question you're going to get in moments.
Good. That's
what a great teaser.
Perfect.
Continue.
Perfect. So he's looking at all this food like, why is everybody miserable here? Look at all of this food. Until he realized that every single person, their utensils were 6 feet tall. And so when the dinner bell rang, all it was were these tiny emaciated people trying to feed themselves with these 6 foot utensils, and they couldn't. So the food would drop and they would never get one morsel of delicious goodness into their mouth, and they were miserable. So dude was like, this sucks. This is hell. It doesn't get worse than this right here. This is the worst. You can't nourish it. You can't. This is awful. This is torture. And you get to see all of, oh, that's the worst. The worst. Well, finally. Yeah, go ahead.
I just don't understand why people can't eat with their hands.
That's the rule.
All right.
It's
all right,
the rule.
Right.
You fair have enough, to fair use fair the giant utensils. You fair have enough. To use the giant utensils. So then his time passed. The judge is like, all right, you're done with hell. You can go to heaven now. Thanks a lot. So dude pops over to heaven. Looks exactly the same. Exactly. But everybody is rosy and glowing and happy and skipping.
I have a feeling
like,
about this.
What is going on here? What? This is exactly like hell. Dinner bell rings. Everybody sits at the table. The spread all the way down. Mm. Everybody has the 6 foot giant utensils. Exactly the same. When the bell rings, everybody takes their giant utensil and feeds someone across the table. Such a small shift. Everybody's helping to feed each other. Such a small shift. You don't have to believe in spirituality to understand the basis of the concept of that parable. Doing something for someone else because you want to from the kindness of your heart feels amazing. Doing something for someone else because you feel obligated feels like crap. How do we, on a daily basis, find within ourselves something that we can do for someone else that we really want to do? Not the stuff that you have to do, that you feel obligated to do. Genuinely, because in your heart, you're like, you know what? I'm going to pay for this guy's coffee today. You know what? I'm going to open the door for this lady. You know what? I'm going to pay attention to what's going on around me and see if somebody needs help, and I'm going to be there to help. You know what? I'm going to call my friend who I know is going through a hard time. All these tiny little things that we take for granted, but if we put our attention on it every day, that then we're doing the giant utensils. We're living in heaven. Because I don't know about you, but I know that when I'm, I know people don't like the word service, but when I'm giving service to someone else out of love, I feel better than I do when I book the biggest job. I feel like $1 million, because that love just flows. It just flows, and it seems like a floodgate that unleashes when you do something for someone that can never pay you back for what you did. It's a gift on both sides. The person who receives, who is open to receiving a gift like that, is also giving a gift, because to receive a giant gift like that means that you're giving the person giving it the opportunity to give on that big scale. That's a gift, because to have that experience to give something to someone that they'll never have to pay back, there's no owing, there's no debt, there's just here, take this gift. That feels amazing. And I know probably most of the people listening have done that at some point in their life or received that at some point in their life. It feels amazing. And you know it's a really true unconditional gift when the person says pay it forward.
Right. Which is another expression, by the way, that people don't necessarily like.
Right.
Because it got co-opted by like a movie that wasn't.
It did.
Great. But it's a wonderful, like, this is so dumb. And I'm not patting myself on the back for this because it is so small. But just as a like gentle reminder to all of us, like this morning I had an audition. Whenever I'm at a meter, I just do the 2 hours. I'm not going to be there more than 30 minutes.
Right.
I just do the 2 hours. It's so dumb.
Yeah.
But like, but what it feels dumb. Better than that
but
small thing where I'm like, I can listen, I'm going to. Yes, I'm making this 2 hours. So whoever comes in after me for those 2 hours is like, sweet, I don't have to pay for my meter.
And
like,
how
it's
great
so
is it
small.
when you get to the meter
but
and it's already
great.
Full?
Absolutely. Like, you feel like you got a little gift from
the
who
universe.
Knows who.
Yeah, right.
And there is no debt, and I don't know who that person is, and
yes,
they don't owe me anything.
Totally anonymous.
Like, you know what I mean? It's so small, but like, I mean, it really does feel pretty great.
It does feel great because you know you're going to help make somebody's day better, and you just don't know who it's going to be, and you don't get to be in charge of who it is.
Right. Exactly.
That's another thing.
That's a really good point.
You've got to surrender to, I'm going to put out something that makes me feel good and I'm going to give it. I have no control over whether or not somebody chooses to receive it.
So we
all have to practice receiving more. All of us. Because I think giving is a little bit easier for majority of people because we're kind of used to it. Because I believe humans are inherently good. You know, yes, there are people who take and you can feel them a mile away, and then you generally don't really give to the takers because they're going to take what they need anyway. But the people generally tend to give. The receiving part, that means that you have to receive love. It's not even about what you're receiving in terms of material goods. It's always about receiving that love, that little piece of the universe saying to you, what if I love you?
Mm.
What if you let me love you today?
Mm-hmm.
What would that feel like? What if you just relaxed for this second and you let the love in? What if? And you don't have to believe it. You don't have to make it happen, but just wonder about that. What if today I opened up to receive the love that's waiting to come to me, and for whatever reason, I'm blocking it out? And it could be I'm too busy worrying. I feel too scheduled. I need to get all this stuff done. I feel obligated.
My God, it could be as hard. It could be as severe as I don't feel I deserve it.
That,
I can't accept it.
That's a big one. The worthy thing is a big one. Most people don't feel worthy of receiving. They don't feel that they've earned it. But the gift wouldn't be there if you didn't.
Yeah.
It wouldn't even be waiting in the wings if you didn't earn it.
Yeah.
And it's not going to come in without your permission. That's how the universe works. You have to give permission for those presents that are waiting to come in for you. That permission could be as easy as, I am open to receiving today all the gifts and blessings that I have been ignoring.
Yeah.
It might be an amazing day. You might be overwhelmed. You know, I've had gifts where it was really hard for me to accept. Really hard for me to accept because I wasn't open enough. But the gift was so big, I couldn't reject it. And I had to go through that space, that very uncomfortable space of like, I am now going to have to open up and receive this gift. And that happens between me and my boyfriend all the time. My boyfriend is always trying to find new ways to show me love, to give me love. And I suck at receiving it. Suck at receiving it. Where I'm like, I don't want that love. It doesn't look like it's not packaged the way I am comfortable with. And he'll do something silly like, you know, squeeze me and from behind me like, meh. I'm like, no, I don't want it that way. I don't want this. And it reminds me of my cat. You know, like I've had a cat where the cat was very particular about how it wanted to be loved. And I wanted to just hug it and squeeze it.
Right.
So this is the relationship. I'm hugging and squeezing you, and the cat's like, fuck off.
Yep,
and ran away.
Yep.
I had to learn how the cat wanted to be loved and then give the love in that form that the cat could receive, you know, which was amazing for me, where I'm like, oh, it isn't about me. It isn't about, what do you mean it's not about me? Why does it matter?
Yeah.
But then you learn how to give and receive love. It's that beautiful dance of learning how to give and receive love with someone else. And that's what I'm doing with my boyfriend. And I suck at it some days, and I'm great at it other days. Like, some days I'm amazing and I'm impressing myself. I'm
But like, and just to go back to what we actually said to each other before we started recording, and then I'm going to get into this mash with you because I'm very excited about is that you know that your intention moving forward in your life and every day is towards the positive and towards connectedness and towards connectivity is probably an actual word. But that's a huge difference. And so being able to acknowledge and forgive yourself for the things you suck at is part of the sort of larger scheme, if you will, of, you know, your very positive, beautiful intention. And so it makes it, when you know that your long-term intention is pure and is that you, part of the intention is working towards that purity, then I think you can be a lot easier on yourself about stuff. And that's something that I struggle with too.
I like that. I like the phrase, I learned this in 12 step programs. This too shall pass.
Yeah.
When I'm stuck in the yucky, mucky, bad neighborhood in my mind, and it's a bad neighborhood, like some seriously dangerous people live in that neighborhood in my mind, I can always say, this is going to pass. Right. This too shall pass. This isn't forever. This is only temporary. So why don't I just try to, and I use affirmations, because if I make my mouth say it, eventually the rest of me follows.
Right.
But my mouth has to say it, and I don't necessarily have the rest of me attached to it at first, but that's the only way for me to get out of that neighborhood.
And when you're a young person, you know, one of the nice things about getting older is that you actually have experience behind you to show that this too shall pass.
Yeah.
And when you're younger, I think it's really hard to see that. But like, that's why kind of having that awareness that someone's been there before you, and that you can say this too shall pass. If you're not a 12-step person, that doesn't matter at all. This is just about like finding a thing for you that you can sort of live in while you wonder if it's going to pass. Because, you know, as you accumulate these experiences, you see that they do, and part of the really happy stuff passes, and that can be really scary.
Yeah.
But to know that that's part of, you know, some sort of cycle that you're in, and
cycles. Although, you know, the good stuff ends too, but then everything ends. Everything comes to a beautiful, and then something new begins. It always begins.
That's what I'm saying. Let's get into some mash.
Let's mash.
Speaking of cycles. All right, listen, I already teased this out, so you know I got to say, not only is it not fattening, it is a food that, three different foods that it's actually good for you. I'm going to go ahead and say it's good for you. Three things that are terrible for you that you would love to have that you could have whenever you want. Snap of a finger, could be as specific as this one cupcake from this one place.
I know.
Or it could, she already knows. Okay, great. Yeah. So let's get three.
Chocolate croissant.
Wonderful. I'm right there with you.
Oh my God, I miss those.
It really does feel like it's like a special delivery from heaven.
It kind of does. Yeah, it really does. A large pepperoni pizza.
Great.
With extra cheese and extra pepperoni.
Great.
Oh, I miss that too. And poutine.
Oh, good one. God, you really ran the gamut. I'm very proud of you. Great. Especially coming from somebody who lived so close to Quebec. Wait. Okay, next one is going to be three places that are not real. So places from fiction, from or a place you could never actually live, but that does exist, like in the clouds or under the ocean. Three vacation homes that, but it's not like Hawaii. Do you know what I'm saying? Something more magical than that.
If I could live by underneath the ocean by the Great Barrier Reef, I would like to live there.
Great.
I feel like there might be some awesomeness happening there. I kind of feel like I would also like to live in that area where Atlantis sank.
Sure.
Also under the water, because I feel like there's an entire underground city of civilization there. Definitely. So those two places for sure.
And then it can also be like, another, you know, it could be like Hobbiton or, you know, I say Dagobah, which
I don't know exactly which planet I would want to live, but I want to live, you know, in a land far away in the future, that Star Wars place, wherever Star Wars is, the original three Star Wars, like, not the planet that blew up.
What about where the Ewoks are?
Oh, yeah. Andor. Yeah, Andor is perfect.
I'll straight up be your treehouse neighbor. Be a treehouse neighbor. Okay.
Oh, I would love that. That would be awesome.
Okay, great.
That was perfect.
Well,
Andor,
we'll see.
The win.
okay. Next category is going to be three people, living or dead, from any time period, anything that you have this magic ability to sort of psychically connect with and have these conversations with whenever you want.
Rumi, the poet from Persia.
Perfect.
This is hard choice. Only two more. I would really love, I don't know why, but just August Strindberg. I feel like I would be a such better actor if I could just talk to him for long periods of time.
Sure.
I just love him.
Love it.
Oh, there's one more.
I know you'll think of eight more when you're in the car too. That's how this works. But that's the idea, right?
Yeah.
Is that it opens. Now you have this full day of thinking about things you love that will just keep floating to the surface of your brain
through
the day.
I love that.
Yeah.
Pythagoras.
Ooh. Boy, I have no idea if I spell that right. The good thing is a pen that's so thick that I can't even tell.
Perfect.
I'll know what it says without knowing if I spelled it right.
Yes.
Next one is three. Now, this is pretty. No, I'm going to save it. Never mind. Listen, all due respect to your wonderful boyfriend. This is the game of MASH. Okay. What comes along is built in with a game of MASH is three people that you have a sort of alternate universe romance with, or a partnership companionship with, or a hot sex fling with, whatever thing is most appealing to you about whatever person. Anybody from, could be like young Jimmy Stewart, could be current Johnny Depp, could be Hugh Laurie. That's me. You can say I pick, Jimmy Stewart, because in an alternate universe, I'm married to him. But I would pick, Sid Vicious because I would just want to have sex with him one night. Like, you can decide.
Oh, I like that.
And then you'll end up with one of them.
Okay. Jack Black.
Great.
Because he makes me laugh my ass off.
He's amazing.
Okay. Oh, there's so many all of a sudden.
Well, you're a people person.
I do like, and I like boys. I do.
That's the best thoughtful mulling over. I do.
It's hard to pick just the one, just one, huh?
Three. Well, you get two more.
Yeah, two more. Okay.
You know what? Maybe I'll do.
Let's come back to this.
No, I'm willing to do this.
Okay.
Three of these are alternate universe marriage. And then I'll give you three more that are like sexy times. Just like you wouldn't want to spend your life with this dude, but let's get into it.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
So
Jack Black, I'm going to put in which marriage? No.
Yeah.
I mean, I would marriage. Yes. Partner.
He would be my marriage in an alternate life.
I don't know if that helps you.
It totally does.
Now I'm giving you lovers and partners.
It totally does. Okay. Okay. Well, then you can put Idris Elba in marriage as well.
Let's get in there ASAP. God damn, he's wonderful. Oh, it's painful.
And also in marriage, put Pierce Brosnan in the 80s. Pierce Brosnan.
This is not an 80s movie. It is one of my favorite movies. If you have not seen The Matador, please do yourself a favor and see The Matador. It is a wonderful movie. He is better than I've ever seen him in anything.
Oh, I love it.
It is such a great movie. The Matador, everybody. Just do it. It's funny. It's not like a, heavy, deep. I mean, I guess Pierce Brosnan doesn't do that many things that are like gut-wrenching.
I love it.
He is so good. Anyway, okay. So you got those. Okay,
let's get into sexy time.
Yeah, sexy times.
There's some people I don't want to name because it would... We know them.
Okay, so we're going to skip past those.
So we're going to go straight. Channing Tatum.
Sure. Let's get him
just
in there.
Just sexy time.
Let's get him in there.
Just let him in the little mic stance.
Sure,
just
sure.
Sure. Do that.
It's a great choice. It's a great use of the category. Great use of the category.
Very, very, very fan. I used to have the biggest crush on Johnny Depp, but I don't anymore. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I would. And it would just for sexy time, not for anything else. But I feel like, Angelina Jolie for sexy time.
Yeah, she's pretty
no
sexy.
No question. I would love to that.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, Matt Damon for Sexy Time.
Boy, that's tough, man. I feel I could spend some serious hang time with him, too.
Yeah.
I think he's terrific.
Yeah.
Great, great, great. Okay, great. Wonderful. Okay, next category is going to be three skills that you can wake up with tomorrow that you've sort of downloaded Matrix style. So you wake up and you're like, oh my God, I'm amazing at this,
Kung
and this.
Kung Fu.
Amazing. I'm so glad that that turned out to be the literal example.
That would be amazing. Beautiful. I wish I was a sound engineer.
Great.
I wish I knew that. Like, great. I wish I was like a master sound engineer.
Great. Love it.
That would be amazing.
Me too.
What else would I love to... there's the universe. I would love to speak every language.
Great.
Every language. Like, great. Not just bilingual, yep. But like every freaking language and be like, oh, here, let me break down the Latin source of that.
Great use of it. Great use of it. Fantastic. Okay. Next one is going to be three movies that you can jump into and just be and hang out with those characters whenever you want. It's almost like another vacation home in a sense. It's like, I'm going to pop into this film and like, this is a real world. These aren't actors. Yeah. All of this is real.
Original great. Star Wars trilogy.
Great.
The movie Legend.
Oh, Legend.
And Love Actually.
Oh, Love Actually. Ugh. Yeah. Great choices. What can
thanks.
I say? Okay, this is my final category. This is one I said I was going to save.
No.
It's very abstract. I don't know what I mean by it.
Okay.
But I had the idea of it way early on in the podcast that I wanted to ask you, which is three gifts that you wish you could give everyone or maybe some individual person that for whatever reason you can't do right now. Now, what I mean by that is it could be that you wish you could buy your mom a castle in Ireland. It could be that you wish that you could buy someone more time. It could be anything like that. I mean, I think part of the thing that you do is give the gift of your voice and the gift of your love and spirituality to the world. So I feel you're already doing that.
Right.
So I guess it's sort of like it can be as material based or as spiritual based, or you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
I'm with you. I would love to be able to gift my sister financial freedom.
Great.
I would love my sister to be financially free to pursue her dreams.
Beautiful.
I would love to be able to send my parents to the Masters. It's some sort of golf thing that costs like 10 grand a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all my dad would, you know, he wouldn't ask for much, but I'd love to be able to afford to send them that. I would if this doesn't even feel possible, but I used to always have this dream of creating a school, a really open creative school that focused on creative arts and spirituality. And for some reason, it was on a mountain, you know, like I'm like, and that the best teachers in the world would come to this school to teach children. Like it was this fantasy I had for years and years. And the kids didn't have to pay to go. It would be, you know, it would be application only. And then we would hand choose and interview children that would fit with this
love.
Creative, spiritual, holy minded.
In.
Yeah.
It. It's beautiful. Okay. Yeah. Tell me when to stop.
Okay. I can't see what she's doing.
No, she can't.
Stop.
Okay. Great. Okay. I'm going to pause this. I'm going to do my calculations.
Okay.
I'm going to come back with your 100% guaranteed match feature. Okay, I am very delighted with the results.
Oh.
I feel you will be too.
Oh my goodness, I'm excited.
It's
nervous.
It's great. I mean, you picked such great stuff. You can't go wrong.
Okay.
First of all, I want to congratulate you on your ability to send your parents to the Masters.
Oh.
I just got to get right into
like
that
I feel like that's
gift.
Possible.
It's quite wonderful. Well, yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
And now you put it out there.
Yeah.
Now you put it out there. I want to... Now, there is a spillover. I guess I should have known this was going to happen. Once you said both Endor and Star Wars as a possibility, of course those two things merged and became one. So you have a vacation apartment... Which makes sense because Endor is like you're living in the trees.
Yeah,
that's not a house.
It's an apartment.
It's an apartment.
Perfect.
So you got an apartment in Endor, but the Star Wars trilogy, you got it all. So you know you're in that universe, so you can live there and you can zip over to all the other planets.
Oh my God, that's
Tatooine, I believe, is one of them. You can go to the cloud planet where Lando.
I feel like I won the lottery.
You did it. You did it. So that's pretty extraordinary.
Oh my God.
If you like that. Oh, and this also makes a lot of sense. You can speak every language.
Of course, I could. I'm C-3PO.
I know. It's amazing.
I love it.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
Oh my God, it makes sense.
Also, you have this very amazing psychic connection with Strindberg. So you're connecting with your art in a deeper way on a regular basis, which I think is fantastic. Now, this is the thing. I mean, this is like, I don't even know which one to say first because all three of them are my favorite thing ever. And it all really feels like it makes sense. Number one, you got Idris. Number two, and I mean all due respect, I'm sorry to fetishize or objectify both of these people, but the fact that you also got Angelina.
Yes! Oh my God!
Is the hottest.
It is the hottest.
Threesome
ever
I can possibly
oh my God oh my
imagine.
Temperature just,
I know
whew.
Now
oh my goodness
let me just say
oh my goodness
that I can't think of anything better for you to enjoy after your threesome with those two and limitless amounts whenever you want and it's good for you heaven's gift the chocolate croissant.
Yeah! Thank you. The gods were on my side.
That is me receiving gifts today.
Yeah.
I receive all of those
I'm
gifts.
Give you this.
I never even. You know what I should do is I should give these to people more often.
Oh, I am so putting
that
on my. Yes, this is.
You got your beautiful
mash
future, Aaron.
Wow,
you have been a phenomenal
Thanks
guest.
For having. I'm it's so good to
so
see
happy.
You.
It's so good
Thank
to see you.
Thank you for getting the excuse together.
Oh
so
my
that
God,
we hang
I know
out.
That's my favorite thing about the podcast.
It worked.
That it affords this time together and. I just can't say enough good things. Now, you are on Twitter at Aaron Fitzgerald.
Yes.
Anything else that you want to tell people about where they can find you? I'm sure there'll be
Twitter,
people.
Twitter, I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram, Aaron Fitzbadass.
Amazing.
Yeah. My website is aaronfitzbadass.com.
Great.
It has all of everything that I've done there. I work specifically video games and cartoons. That's and some anime. So I'm in that universe. That's what I do for my day job. So feel free to follow me there. If you want to talk spirituality and stuff, feel free to contact me on any of social media means. I'm happy to. Again, that for Los Angeles, Southern California events. It's a Facebook page called Spiritual Experience Gatherings if you want more on that kind of stuff.
And I will go ahead and say, too, you guys know I love hearing from you, and I love talking about spirituality, so I also welcome you to write me. You know my address, janavarney.com, and I will loop Aaron in, and then the three of us can
get into it. Oh, that would be amazing.
Into it!
Yeah, we can.
I adore you. I just think
love
you're
you
so
too.
Magical and special.
So great to see you.
Guys, we'll talk to you next time on the podcast for Crane Out Loud. As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.